Hey folks, welcome to the Redneck Country Podcast, and this week we are going to be talking about some hunting, but not what you think. We are going to the waterways where we hunt brown trout, and we do this every year. We got some crazy stories, and we can't wait to share them, hopefully give you some tips and tricks on how we do it, and how successful we are at it, and maybe some failures that we had, and hope you learned something, and maybe fuel you to get out and do the same kind of brown trout hunting that we do. And on the phone with me is Real Redneck Bill. Tom, Bill, are you there?
Good evening, everybody. I'm anxious to have this podcast this evening because me being not a big trout fisherman, I'm anxious to learn from you guys and ask some questions as a newbie to the sport.
Right on. Right on. So you've done a lot of fishing, just not a whole lot of brown trout fishing or hunting, as we say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not a stream fisherman or a trout fisherman by nature, but I do love to fish, that's for sure.
Right on. And with us is Real Redneck Scotty Goodall. Scott, you there?
I am here.
One syllable words, but he's here. Right on. And Scott goes with us every year. He is probably one of the better fishermen. Every year we'll have a down year. And since Scott's been coming, I don't think you've had a down year yet, have you, Scott? Where?
No, it's been pretty good, really.
Yeah, rub that in. Can't complain. And chuckle, of course. And on the phone with us tonight, folks, is a special treat, maybe. It may be a frustration, but the patriarch of Redneck Country, my dad, Don Millard. Dad, are you there?
I'm here. I'm listening.
He is here and he is listed. All right. So we are going to go on this journey that we do every year. And we typically only do it once a year because then we get right into turkey season. So opening day of trout for us is in our area is the last Saturday in April. And a lot of times turkey will be already opened. It would have opened on like the Thursday beforehand. And, but we're dedicated. This is kind of the family fishing trip that I remember dad taking me. How young was I? 6-7 years old when we first went?
Yeah. Yeah. You're a little guy.
And fighting through thorns. And that's what I remember, trying to get close to the stream because you got to find those back eddies and the log jams where the trout are. But we'll get into that. But yeah, we've been doing it for that long. And we've got this stream that I will not divulge. So many people want to know where this. I have been showing pictures of massive bucks and said, look, I will let you take my tree stand and shoot this buck if you take me to your brown trout stream. And I won't tell anybody where it is. If they ask where it is, we do not tell. We just grin, give them a little wink and a nod. Dad, how many times have you been asked where this stream is?
Oh, thousands. Yeah. I've been threatened to be followed and everything else.
Yeah. And Scotty, you've been asked since you've been going with us now. You've been.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Many, many times. It's insane.
The people see. Sorry, go ahead, Bill.
How did you get that rite of passage, Scott, to partake in the annual? Did you have to be blindfolded and spun around three times?
The first year, I kind of thought that. The first year, I really thought that they were driving around in circles until I was dizzy. Honestly, all I had to do was be nicer to Don than Todd.
the sun he never had. Oh, good grief. True story. So, Bill, I called. Call it the inner circle, and because dad has come up in this area, and he, like, dad, this is all you did, right? You duck hunted and you fished, right?
Yeah,
like forever. And so,
okay. And since I was 15.
And how often? How many days a week did you duck hunt before I was born?
Oh, I used to hunt 6 days a week.
Yeah. So, and that's how you found these streams where the trout are, right?
Yeah. A buddy of mine and I, he's gone now, but yeah, we found this stream and oh my gosh, did it produce brown trout.
And so luckily I've been born into this. And so now I get all of the secrets of the Millard hunting. And I'm going to call it hunting because I still say we hunt the Browns. So it was, it's a very, I call it the inner circle, because so many people, when you have all of these spots, as arrogant as it sounds, and that's what makes us really successful, I believe, is a little bit of technique, but the majority is the land, the property that we are blessed to be able to hunt and fish. And so when you have that and people see the pictures, and I mean, of course I'm going to, it's my personality, but you're proud that you've caught these browns. And now, you know, you've got a limit on the ends of your fingers and you're showing people pictures. They want to know where it is. So naturally people want to be your friend. Naturally people want to go, and it is nonstop people wanting to go hunt with you or go fish with you. And so the issue is, as I could imagine everybody, you want to foster and get new people doing it. Absolutely. But we still hold a few spots close to our hearts. We will take new hunters on goose fields and show them the ropes and do all that. And, but we've got some spots for deer. We've got some spots for turkey, and we've got some spots for brown trout that we keep near and dear to our hearts. So I call it the inner circle, and it will take a little bit to get in that inner circle. And right now, Scott, I think, is the only one of my friends that has ever been to this stream, and I'm now 41 years old. So that'll tell you how hard it is to get to that inner circle, because this is coveted, and we don't run into anybody on this stream. Like opening day of trout, you would expect to be bumping into people and arm in arm and hitting them, but we run into nobody. And so this unbelievable spot that we have. And so we want to keep it that way. And we don't want to outfish it. Like I said, we only hit it once a year. And if we go trout fishing again that year, which we don't often, cause then we're into turkey season, but a couple years ago we did, dad's got some other streams that are a little more well known that we go and we hit. And Scotty actually caught a monster brown out of one of those a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yep, that's right. I got an awesome picture of that.
Yeah, and it was running. Like, the water was running like crazy. And I'm like, well, this is a waste of time. You can't find a log jam. You can't find nothing. It was like rapids. And you end up pulling out this nice, I don't even know, like a 22-inch brown. Like, right?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a good one. So anyway.
I'm sure you guys will get into it, but you're spinning or you fly fishing these?
Neither. So
neither.
Yeah, neither. So you have a spinning reel, but really that's not it. And here's the technique. And so Dad is the one that taught me. Maybe Dad, do you want to explain the technique on what you're doing?
Well, all it is a spin cast reel. And we just put some lead shot, depending on how deep and how fast the stream's running, and hook a worm through the middle and let her go, drift her down through. Lose lots of hooks. But you got to use heavy line and hope you can bend the hook out of the snags rather than break off all the time.
That's it. If you're not losing hooks, breaking line, or straightening hooks, you're not trout hunting. Let me tell you that. Yeah, you will. We go with, oh my gosh, Scotty, we're always nervous every year, right? We got six packs of hooks. Is that enough? Because
what size?
18 dozen worms.
two odd. Am I right, Dad? Two odd hooks.
Yes,
That is, and I've had others, but yeah, two odd hooks. But Scott's right. We get dozens of worms, and it's always like, well, we don't want to have too many, but it's one day a year. And how much is a dozen worms? It's better to err on the side of caution and have too many than not enough. And that's so, right. So what we do is we go and we park and we walk across this field and drop down over in through the woods and where the stream is, and then you can start fishing right there. But we don't. We walk, and we get in there while it's still dark, right? So we're getting there at, I don't even know what time, 5:30 is when I probably want to get there before the sun's up. And then we start walking, and you got to go half up a ravine and half down, and it's washing away more and more every year. And we keep going.
The turkeys are gobbling in the background. Oh,
Jesus, just as the sun's coming up, turkeys gobbling all around you. You're watching them land all around, and all you got's a fishing pole. And gobbling, strutting, walking. And so we walk all the way back, and we've all got our spots now, and even Scotty. So Dad doesn't go on that long trek. You might go this year, Dad. Are you going to go on that long trek on the way in now you've lost that 86 something pounds?
Well, I'll go as far as that one bend where I like to sit. Now, whether I go further or not, because it still gets mucky and the boots are still heavy and my knees still bother me. And so it it's certainly a lot easier going in now. But back where you guys go, there's a lot of side hills washed away, and you got to climb up around the roots of the trees that have fallen across the stream. So I don't know if I'd make that trek, but I just enjoy picking my spot, a couple of holes there on the way in and a chair. And I don't use a split shot drift anymore. What I use is that sinker with the wire on it, so that the sinker's on the bottom and the wire's up top with an eyelet. And then I tie a worm on that eyelet about 2 feet out from that wire, so that when I throw it in and I tighten up the line, the sinker's on the bottom, I'm tightened against that sinker, but that wire is holding that worm up in the current off the bottom. And I just sit there and wait for them to come along. And I get two or three. You guys fill the limit, but I still enjoy it sitting there. That's fun.
Yeah.
So I got a question.
Hippie.
So listen to your setup there. Are you using a different test line as a leader from the wire to the hook, or is it the same test?
Same heavy line. Yeah, same heavy line, because if you do happen to get hooked up, you want to straighten that hook. You don't want to lose that whole outfit.
Let me tell you, Bill, if you are a today fisherman, not a 30, 40 year ago fisherman, and you looked at Dad's rod setup and his reel and that line, you would not use it.
Yeah.
Am I right, Scott?
Yeah, you're right.
That line is huge and thick, and you think trout fishing and you think finesse.
That's what I'm thinking. That's exactly what I'm thinking in my mind is, nope. Is a heavy line up to your sinker, light monofilament out to your hook so they can't see it, and you know, maybe a, I don't know, 8 pound test, something or other to get them in.
No, nope.
But what I'm hearing from you guys now is way wrong.
Yeah. So what are you using, Dad? Do you even know? It's like 20 pound test, or so, like old school monofilament, like 20 pound test.
Yeah.
Like it's thick.
Because you can get some pretty good browns. The biggest brown I ever got in one of those streams, especially the one where we're fishing, is about 6 pounds. And a 6 pound brown, man, I'm telling you, the first thing they want to do is they want to go under the bank. They want to go in the log jam, and they will wrap themselves around them logs. And if you don't use any line heavier, they're not going to still be on the line by the time you wade in and go under for them.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'll use heavier line, and my line's pretty good. I don't even remember what it is. It's that green low viz. But what are we using, Scotty? Are we using 12 or 10 pound?
Honestly, I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's still pretty good size line. It might even be heavier than that, but it is that green low viz where Dad's using the old school monofilament. Like, I mean, and it's thick. It bird's nest. It just right off the end of the reel. But we're using that low viz green and in there because of the color of the stream and stuff. But we're a little more finesse on that. But and we lose hooks. I mean, it is what it is. You got to, or you're not hunting trout, because where those trout are. So when we go back in, we'll drop Dad off. Typically, it used to be Dad would come up, and now where Scott starts, that was actually where Dad started, right? Because your first time,
that was the first place your dad ever took me.
Yeah, Dad took you in, and I go up probably 20 yards from them. I could see them, but I just go up 20 yards. And what we do is we got our spots, we're getting there, so it's just getting light, we're ready to rock. So put the worm on, and so where I start, it's a rapids that comes up through to a log jam. And I get a trout out of that log jam usually every opening day. That's my first little spot. Within the first couple casts, I'll pull one out. I know it's going to be a good day. And so then what we do is there's a couple little rapids up to Scott that I lean over the bank watching my shadow, because Dad's told me that, watch your shadow. These trout are smart. So you come up to the bank, make sure your shadow doesn't hit the water. But all I'm doing is you open the bail and you hold that line with your other hand. So you're holding the rod with one, open the bail and hold your line with your other hand. And then all you do is just drop the worm and get your rod out over, because the stream's not even that really that wide. I mean, it's not a huge stream, but you just drop that worm down and you have the right amount of split shot. It may take a couple casts to learn the speed of the water at that time to see how much split shot you need. And we yell back and forth, how much split shot you got on? And, but we just drop it and let it. And then what you do is you can let it bounce along the bottom and let it go. And if you got the right amount of split shot, that worm will just bounce along the bottom just fine. And you just keep your finger on that line and just let it out slowly, because you don't want that worm to get wrapped around a log or something like that. You want it to get under that log. So you're holding your line pretty tight and you could feel it on the bottom and you know it's going, and you just let a little bit out at a time and let it, and you can see your line on the top of the water, roughly where your worm is down below that, and just let it go. And then all the way until you figure you're under that log jam, and then you wait. And you don't wait long. I mean, you get it under there because you're either going to get hung up on the log, wrapped around a branch coming off the log, or you're going to feel a tap tap. And there is nothing in this world that on opening day of trout, when we get down into this stream and you put that in there, and whether it's your first cast or it's your 40th cast and you feel that tap tap, you know. And now, Dad, you told me that trout are smart. The minute you feel that tap, what do you do?
Yeah, go on that line. If you can feel them, they can feel you.
That's exactly what he said. Hey, I was 8 years old. If they could, you could feel them, they could feel you. And so you let go of that line and let them take it. So what I do is I let go of the line, let them take it. I'll pull some off my reel, and then I'll close my bail, and then I'll slowly start to reel up. The minute it starts to get tight again, you'll feel them again. Tap, tap. You know, from the amount of time that it took me to let go of my line for them to take it, for me to pull off a couple more spools, close my bail, grab my handle, start to reel in really, really slow, and I feel that tap, tap again, they took it. They're there. So now it's set the hook and horse them in. Am I right?
So, and you got to horse them in, because in the stream we fish, it's nothing but snags and logs and trees. And you got to horse them in, and you got to keep more out from under the bank and out of those jams.
And that's why the heavy pound. So you just
you're not letting them run and fight them like you would on a bigger body.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Nope.
If you do, you're losing them.
Yeah, there and we've got stories. I mean, I guess now's a good time for a tangent. There was and Dad's got a few. Sorry, Bill, you're gonna say something?
No, I'm listening and learning.
Oh yeah, right on. Well, and I'll tell you, for me it was a learning curve, and I didn't, when I was eight, I don't think I liked it that much. But we only went once in a while, just because you got to fight through thorns and get in the stream, and it's a long hike and yada, you know, when you're eight, who cares? And then to try and do all this, it's a lot. But now, oh my gosh, it's got to be one of my most favorite things to do. Because when you feel that tap, tap, and you let go, and then like I'm feeling it right now in my head. It's just, my heart's thumping.
It's anticipation right there.
I tell you what. So anyway, I got to dodge it, because I remember, and Dad, fill in the blanks. But we leapfrog each other. So I'll carry on and I'll hit that target. So what we do is, as we're going, we will leapfrog each other going down the stream. So Scott starts, I go up 20 yards, I will fish my way to Scott. Scott starts in such a big hole, which was Dad's, and there's so many, in a 10-yard little run, there's so many log jams and then little rapids in between that those browns lay in, that Scott's there for a good, hour, Scott?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I'll catch up to Scott, and then we fish it together. And then once we figure, okay, we've outfished this, we will start leapfrogging each other down the stream. And so I'll hit a hole, and then Scott will go past me and he'll do one. But we're always within 10, 20 yards. Like, we're always within ear and eye shot of each other.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so Dad used to do it too. Now Dad just goes and finds that spot, that honey hole, and sits. And his theory is, the browns are going to cruise that stream, and so he's just going to sit there and wait for him to cruise by and grab his worm, where we're actually going and we're hunting them, which he used to do. So anyway, I remember the one time me and Dad were leapfrogging each other, and we got a ways down, and I don't know if it was, there's a bridge somewhere around there, like a little implement bridge that I think, I don't remember if Dad was standing on it, but he's seen a shadow go by. And there goes, and he cast out. And he hooks into this fish. He actually got a fish. And this thing wraps around a branch. And so every time he pulls his line up, you can see the line and you can just see the tail of the fish that it's in there. And so I remember a story a long time ago, a dad telling me of him having to go into the water and follow the line down and reach under the gill plate. Dad, do you remember this story?
Oh, yeah.
So tell that story, because that one resonated with me. Like, that's what set me up.
This was before you. And I used to fish several streams, and I'd go 2-3 times a week when I was younger. And I wasn't turkey hunting or anything then either. So fishing was a big deal to me. And this particular stream, I knew there were big browns, and you didn't catch a lot of browns, but when you hooked into one, they were usually 3 pounds and up. And so I'm letting this line go under this log jam, and it's under the log jam, and I'm actually, I figure I'm past the log jam into a little pool the other side of it, and it's gone under. And I feel the tap tap, I let go, close the bail, start to reel up, and then bam, there's the jerk. He's taking it, he's feeling me, now he wants to run. And I set the hook, and I'm trying to horse this fish back underneath. But your bail, you got to test your bail. You got to set your bail so your line won't break. So I usually wrap the line around my hand about 3 times and then pull. And as long as that bail will allow that line to come out, then I know it's not going to break. But that's a pretty heavy pull because I use heavy line. Well, this fish is not coming in. The bail is skipping. I get him a little bit, and then next thing you know, he takes some more line. And I fight him under there for a while, and then all of a sudden it goes tight. And I pull, and I don't feel him. But the line's not coming. This line is taut. And if I pull hard, it just comes off the bail. So I figure that this fish is wrapped around a log or something in there. And I figure he's still on because I'm using a pretty good line. So I holler for my buddy at that time. And so he comes running over, and I said, look, just hold this pole for me. I got to go down and see if I can see this fish downstream. So he's holding the pole. He says, it's tight. I said, yep, it's wrapped around a log. You won't feel the fish. Just don't break it off. And so just hold on to it while I go down. So I go downstream, and I'm looking into this pool on the other side of it. And the water's running pretty good. The water's running fast. And I'm looking in there, and I can just see the tail of that fish, and he's angled down, straight down to the bottom. And I can just see the tail moving. So I said, okay, I got to go in the water. So off comes the boots and stuff. And so I wade into the water, and I walk up to where I figure I saw this fish, and I'm in over my waist. So I look down in, let the kind of the silt and everything clear. And now I can see the tail. I can see the fish angling down, and I figure he's tight against the log. So I figure he's wrapped himself this line around this log, and he doesn't even have any move to move. So I hold my breath. Down I go. I feel the fish along the side of him. I move my hand down, find the gill plate. I open his gill plate, and I wrap my first finger inside his mouth, find my thumb coming through the gill plate, and hang on in behind the teeth. Only 2 fingers, keep the rest of the fingers out of the mouth, and I'm wrapped right around the jaw and with my thumb through the gill plate and the finger in the mouth, but behind the teeth. So now I set myself, and I yank. And that line snaps, and up I come holding this fish by the jaw. Now I'm up to my waist in fast water, and this fish is nothing but muscle. This was the 6-pound brown male. He had a beautiful hook jaw.
He's now mounted in my garage.
And oh, yeah?
I lift him up out of the water, like above my waist, and he starts that muscle movement, you know, like it's not really a fast shake. He just starts that muscle movement, but it's quick, and it's enough to get. I have to hold him. My arm is moving. He's moving, and it puts me off balance, and I go backwards into the water with the current. But I hang on. I find my footing again. I've been under the second time. I stand up. I still got a hold of him. I make my way to the bank, and I throw this fish about 10 feet up to far off the bank and climb out, and that fish is now mounted on my wall.
In my garage. Well,
that's
so
awesome.
So now let me tell you, that's dedication. How many people are going to do that to go in, go under the water, and you don't know what this bottom is. There's sticks and branches and logs. It's mucky. It's and you're going into this water. It takes something to do it. Let me tell you that. So that resonated with me. Like every time you're looking and you catch a fish and you go, wow, if it wrapped around that log, would I go in after that like Dad did? No.
Not likely.
It's a story of, yeah, broke my line. Like, that's crazy. Dad, what obsessed you to actually go? Was it because you figured it was a big one, or it was just at the...
I could see it was a big one. I knew it was a big one before he hung up. I could feel that fish taking line, and I knew it was a big one, and I could see it was a big one. I mean, his tail, you spread your hand and his tail was the width of your finger spread out that I could see fanning. So I knew it was a big fish, and I thought, oh my gosh, this one's not getting away from me if I can help it. So then I went.
Okay, so now let's fast forward, and this story's resonated with me, and it was before you started fishing with us, Scotty, so it's going back some 10, 12 years or so, but I remember the same stream here that, and Dad said, he hooks into one, he sees a shadow, and he hooks into one, and sure enough, it's wrapped around. He pulls, and this branch comes up out of the water, and you could just barely see the fish's tail, and he's telling me, I can't see it, he's telling me, oh, it's a monster. You should have seen the shadow that went by. And so all that can go through my head is this story. And so I'm going, I have no options. I now have my own story to go in and get this brown trout. So now when I don't know what time of year, because Dad fished trout so much. Dad, do you know what time of year it was when you did this?
Oh, it was later in the spring. It wasn't early spring. It wasn't really cold like it was this particular day you're talking about.
It wasn't eyelets icing up as you're reeling in. Yeah, let me tell you, folks. So here I am. All right. I walk down the stream to where this branch is coming out of the water. This story in my mind, and Dad's telling me, follow the line down, feel for the gill plate, stick your fingers through, and he's choreographing this as I'm getting undressed. So I get naked.
Now, the difference between you and me was I didn't get down to my underwear when I went in, but you did.
It was cold, but I knew I had an hour drive home or 3 hour drive home, depending on where this place is. So I get naked, and here we go. I take two steps into that water without thinking, and the minute it gets to my knees, I'm locked. I mean, that water, it was icing our eyelets up, and you had to dip your eyelet in the water to break the ice off so that your line would run again. And oh my gosh, I locked up.
Take the breath away.
And I remember Dad saying, if it's too cold and you lock up, forget it. It's not worth it. You get out of there because you won't be able to move. You're going to lock up and freeze. And he's yelling this at me. And I'm thinking, I've gone this far. This fish is coming. So I got to take a minute, collect myself, and away I go. So in I go. I follow the line down. Same thing. I put my hand, I force my finger through this gill plate, and it's all I can do to get my finger into this fish's gill plate and get it. I snap the line off and I come out with this, and I bet you it's about 6 inches long. My brother-in-law is walking up on us at this point in time, and he is trying to find his camera. This is before cell phones had cameras and everything. I don't even think we had cell phones, to be honest with you, at this time. He is trying to get his camera out because here I am naked, holding a 6-inch little brown trout, frozen to the core. And now I'm throwing that fish up near Dad, and I'm trying to get my clothes back on as fast as I can. But I'll tell you, I was refreshed because that cold water, and then you put your clothes on, your clothes feel so warm. And I was alive. I was so, but oh my gosh. So yeah, my story wasn't as glorious as Dad's. And here I thought I was doing a huge favor, but
You put yours on the wall?
That was Dad. That was still, it was Dad's fish. I just went in to get it. Oh, jeez.
You're doing the right thing to support your father there.
Yeah, right.
I think he appreciated it every minute of it.
Yeah, I do.
Out of all these stories, though, I still have not heard the secret sauce, which is what we put our hands in.
Oh, yeah. Dad, don't tell the concoction, but tell us the story about it.
I was waiting to jump,
because we are going to sell this stuff. I still, we're going to bottle it and sell it. But now you go ahead. Well, and tell.
I did it one time.
I know, but I'm bringing it back.
I was on a tight budget. Now I've got a couple of kids and I'm on a tight budget, mortgage, car payments. And so I was finding things to supplement my hobby. And so I come across this fish oil. I read in a book about this fish oil. And at the time they said use linseed oil or not linseed oil, sorry, anise oil.
Be careful. You're going to give away the secret sauce. Just talk about it. Don't give all of your ingredients here. We're going to sell it.
Or this other kind of sauce. And I remember my grandfather going fishing with my grandfather. He always had a little container of anise oil in his toolbox or his tackle box. And I never saw him use it, but I always wondered what this was for. And I asked him a couple times. He says, for catching fish, but he never explained it to me. Well, I read in this book that you've got to rub it on your hands. So I come across this other, what you call sauce. And so I got some, and I would rub it on my hands. And I found that, you know, if I could catch a chub or a sucker or something, and there's not many in that stream because the browns will eat them, and the browns even eat themselves. You catch very little other fish other than browns in that stream. That's because
you hit a rainbow trout stream. If you hunt a rainbow trout stream, you'll catch a lot of chubs, horned aces, whatever you want to call them, right?
You catch no specks. You catch no rainbows.
Not in this stream, yep.
And very few, the odd sucker, the odd chub, but not many because they eat them up. Vicious. So I always found that if I could catch even a perch or anything and rub my hands on it before I touched my worms, I was better off. And then I read in this book that they did a test at a fish ladder, and the bottom of the fish ladder was full of trout. And so they'd go down and they would dump in a little, somebody would rub their hands in the water. Boom, the pool would empty out. Well, a few hours later, the fish would start to come back later. They drop a little bear scent in there, like a few drops. Boom, the pool would enter out, would empty out. They drop a little deer urine or anything, no problem. Any other kind of scent, no problem. So they proved that fish could detect scent. So I rub my hands with this oil, I'll call it, and before I touch my worms, and I would start catching trout right away. So to this day, first thing we do, sometimes even at the car before we even head in, we all dip a finger into this stuff and we get it all. We rub our hands really good.
It is the nastiest smelling stuff, I will tell you. You do not want to stop and eat. You are washing your hands in that stream for 5 minutes before you eat your sandwich.
And you're stirring your coffee with that finger.
Oh, I tell you what, you don't want to touch your face. You don't want to do nothing. Do not pick your nose or you are done for a week.
Of course, once you start catching fish, then your hands are touching fish and it hides your scent. So you don't usually have to use it only the first when you first start out. Cover that scent on your hands before you touch your worms.
Now, I've got questions. And I'm not going to ask too many specific questions, but do you use this for other types of fish when you go fishing or just for trout?
We should.
Oh, no, we use it for others. Yeah.
You do, Dad? When we go up to the cottage, we don't.
Yeah. At the cottage, no, because we're using lures. And we don't at the cottage, but for live bait, and we're handling worms because you're handling worms quite a bit. And then I use it.
We got to go steal some out of his place, Scotty.
Absolutely. I mean,
anyway, I had a friend to go further with that. I had a friend that had a little store in a little village. And so I started bottling this stuff up. I bought some and I bottled it up. And I told him to try a bottle of it, try it. And he come back and he was so excited that he started catching fish right away where he fishes. And he says, can you get me more? I want to sell it in my store. Well, heck yeah. I mean, I paid $3 or $4 and so I bottled it up and I got about 20 little bottles and I sold them to him for $1 and he sold them for $2 in his store. So he made money and I made money. And that was a good little project for a while.
Fishing Bad, the sequel to Breaking Bad. Now we're in a trailer out back concocting this stuff. It's going to be on your store shelves, folks. You keep an eye. Oh man, no, but it does. I guess I've always used it for trout, so I can't say that it. I can't tell you the difference of not using it because we always use it, right? But, right. Yeah, I go off of what Dad says, but we do. You can't argue with our pictures, right? We're limiting out in browns and in a stream. So, and you're right, Scotty. We put a big
and we're home by 1 o'clock.
Yeah, we put big weight onto that stuff. That we need that stuff, or you won't catch fish because you got to.
What is the limit, trout?
The sport one. What is it? Is it five or six? Six, Scott? Five?
I think it's five.
Dad's always the one that has the, okay, guys, and he keeps track. Every time we catch one, we text him or call him, and he lets us know what we're at. Because my brother-in-law will go with us as well, and he might go a different way, so we're not in direct contact. So Dad's our home base and lets us know, and then we'll end up catching up to Dad before we're even close to a limit anyway, and then we carry on past, but... Yeah. No, I it might be five. I gotta like, we all have sport fishing licenses, so it's gotta be around that. It's not the conservation license.
It's a good day of fishing when you can limit out though. No matter if it's three fish or whatever it is, it's a good day when you can catch a limit and be home at a reasonable time.
I mean, we've had it where you start catching them so fast that if they're not bleeding, we'll put them back. Handle them very little, take them off the hook, put them back in. If they're not bleeding, we'll put them. If they're bleeding, we keep them. If they're not bleeding, put them back in. And, I mean, we've posted pictures and I post pictures every year after, and I'll put them on any Facebook group and I'll get guys, way to fish out a stream. Well, for the last 60 years, it hasn't been fished out yet. So doing the same thing. So we manage it. I mean, we go in and we only hit it the one day a year, and we don't go back to that one. We may go trout fishing again, but we typically don't go back to that stream.
Well, when you're driving 3 hours from home, you want it to be a good experience, right?
Exactly. So that's kind of, that's how we do it. We go in and that's my technique. I kind of gave you my technique, and we got some spots where when you come down into that hole, you walk along the bank, you find the hole, you walk down and we know them now. So we know exactly where we're going to leapfrog from the next person, go past them and go to that hole. And we know they're named. I mean, there's probably 30 holes all the way along, and we all know the hole that we're going to next, and let the person know which one we're going to next. And so away we go, and I'll walk up to a spot where it might not be downstream and under a log jam. It might be rapids to the left of me coming from downstream. And so I've got that's when I do a mini cast, I would say. I still open my bail, hold the line, but I flick it out, let go at the same time and flick it down and let it come down. And the spot I'm thinking of, I'll catch a fish there every year, and it's usually the biggest one I catch. But
do you find that the first person to hit a hole, as opposed to the second person or third person that leapfrogs into it, does better?
No, because I have caught fish right after somebody's left that hole. And
can I jump in here for a sec?
No.
There's another phenomenon that I found. and I've fished holes pretty hard, and the odd time I'll feel the tap, let go of the line, close the bail, reel up, not there. And this will happen maybe twice, maybe three times, and then nothing. And then one of the guys will catch me. And how you'd make a note? Okay, I felt a tap twice in this hole right here. But when I reel up, he's not there. You want to give it a try? Yeah, okay, then I'll move. That person will stop, throw that in. Next thing you know, they got the tap, let the line go, reel them up, and they get the fish out of there. So what was I doing wrong? Who knows? Like, why didn't he take it? I have no idea, but that will happen. Somebody will come up behind you. My son-in-law does this all the time. He's usually the last one, and he hits every hole we hit, and he gets fish out of them. He's crazy to fish, and he'll get fish out of every hole that we've left. Am I right, Todd?
Yeah, absolutely. See, and this is where I chalk it up. He's going to kill me on this. I was chirping Scotty on our last podcast on the same thing. But they say that fish, like the scent thing where we put it on our hands, are more attracted to estrogen than testosterone. So I really, really need to fish hard because of the testosterone, whereas Scott or my brother-in-law don't need to fish because they have the estrogen thing on their side that the fish just, they hammer those worms. I mean, they want it. It's just, they're there. So I went through my technique. That's mine in a nutshell, and then leapfrog it down and we'll break and have lunch. And it's kind of nice. We have a same spot where we stop. It kind of opens into a little bit of a meadow. And so we'll stop there and throw our lines in and just kind of still fish while we eat our lunch along the edge of the stream with our feet hanging over the bank. And then we'll carry on if we haven't limited out by then. But the last couple of years, I think we've not even had time for lunch. We've limited out, right?
Yep.
But yep, Scotty, yep. Have you got, or you want to give your technique different than mine at all? Because it's not like I
know
Dad.
If you want to talk about like the last fish I caught, the one that I lost and got mad, threw my pole on the ground, and then the fish came and attacked it again.
So
I want to hear that story again.
Yeah. So, amazing. So I'm going to let Scott tell it, but I'm going to give the prelude. Last year, and this was last year, wasn't it? Not, was it not, Scott?
It was last year.
So last year, we go, and Scotty stops. I go another 20 yards, and I can see Scott. And so where I normally drop in, I'm usually the first guy to catch fish because that's why I go to that spot. That's my spot. That's my hole. And I don't catch anything. And I'm fishing it and fishing it and fishing it because I always get one here. And then within 5 minutes of starting, Scotty gives a little whistle, and I look over, and he's holding a brown. Oh, way to go. And then it's not a minute later. Hey, and he's holding another brown. My gosh, good job. And another minute later, he's holding another. Okay, screw this. I'm now coming. And so he says, come down here with me. That's crazy right now. Get out here. Well, I don't want to take your hole. But well, I'm on my way. And now, Scotty, you can take over. Because this blew my mind that this happened.
I literally moved like 3 yards or 5 yards down the stream and so that you could have the spot where I was fishing.
Yeah, just to my and right. He just moved down 3-5 yards. Like, that was it. And let me drew that hole.
I drew the line in, and before you know it, I got a fish on. And, now, and I'm screaming because it feels like it's a big one.
And that was so a back pool, right?
I got a big one. What's that?
It was a pool. That wasn't rapids or anything. Yep, it was a little back eddy where it was coming in nice and calm. Yeah.
That's right. And then, so I just get it to just about to shore, and it comes off. And I went, I lost it. And I drew my pole down on the ground and the worm went back in the water and that fish attacked that thing again. And I picked up my pole and the fish is still on there.
I looked at my, he gets mad and throws his pole down. Darn it, that fish. I look to my right and bam, it hits the worm on its way back in the water. It's right there. I can't. He grabs his pole and horses that thing in. Honestly, if I did not see this happen, I would not. And some guy on Facebook, like, oh yeah, nice story. Yeah, you're right, sir. I had to make that up because getting a limit of browns isn't enough for me to brag. I had to make that story up just so that I could have Facebook accolades. Like, no, that happened. I watched this happen. It blew my mind. Just as it lets go and that worm comes to the surface of the water and just whoop, Scott throws his pole down and that fish is right back on it. Bam! And it was awesome. Right out of that pool. And then we switched again, and I started catching them there, and then you caught one more to my left. We pulled, I don't know, 6 or 7 out of that hole by the time we moved on.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Last year, that was good morning. Yeah, that was good right there. Never got one out of my spot all the way around to him. And he's going, come over. Nope. Hold on. Well, then once he starts nailing them that fast, I'm thinking he's going to have all our limits in his pack if I don't get over there. Because that will happen. That's why I said Scotty's never had the curse hit him. Well, every year it seems like somebody doesn't do as well and maybe not even catch one. And yet you'll limit out, but one person will go away without catching one or only catching one or two for whatever reason.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So your technique though, Scotty, of dropping that worm in, is it the same as mine? I don't really watch.
Yeah, it's exactly. Cause I learned from you guys, right?
It was Dad that taught you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. You just throw her in there and let her bounce downstream and get underneath stuff and hope for the best.
Yeah. No.
Did you catch fish before you met?
What's that, Bill? Sorry, you're cutting up there.
No. I was just curious if Scotty had trout fished much before he met you guys? Never.
No, I used to actually, like, I would take the kids down to spring water and catch rainbow trout out of a stock pond and stuff like that. But no, never trout fished.
Hunted.
That's right.
Trout hunt.
And my only experience with trout is the same as that in the trout pond. My grandfather took me when I was a kid to a trout pond, and I thought, this is easy. Every cast is a fish, but then you got to pay for them. So
it's like going to the pet store.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. No, it is. I tell you what, it is so much fun that I live for that. Oh, and people say, but it's turkey season. It's the first Saturday at turkeys. Why aren't you getting? Oh my gosh. If you had this stream and fished it like that, turkey's the last thing on your mind when you're, aside from them gobbling in your face when you're trying to catch fish, but it is something else. It is just a blast. So,
and what do you do after, for preparing them? How do you wrap them in tin foil, or how do you cook them?
Well, lately that's dad's gig. Dad, you usually want to have a big fish fry, don't you?
Yeah. I love a good fish fry, especially brown trout that day.
Oh yeah.
So we'll typically gather the family up, and I'll head over to my place. I'll fire up the deep fryer, and then I don't even know. I just put them in the deep fryer. You guys bring them to me battered. So Dad, go ahead on your recipe. And I know Scott's is different, right?
Yeah, Scott, what do you like? What is it, fish crisp you like?
Oh yeah, I like that stuff.
And the one I like is a batter. It's English
style.
Fish and chip batter. I forget the brand name, but all you do is mix it with water, and then I like a nice thick coating of batter on my fish. Scott, he likes the fish crisp, so we do both, and we just take them out to you, and you deep fry them for, I don't know, 30 seconds or so. They're done, nice golden brown and crisp. The girls are inside making French fries. And
I get my fill before we take them in the house.
That's right. You got to get Scotty away from the deep fryer as he's pulling them out. They're disappearing. I thought we had 10 fillets there. There's only 7. Scott can't talk to you. Yep, there was 10.
That's Scott tax. Yeah. You got to pay Scott tax.
That's Scott tax. Right. I like it. Yeah. But I really, you got to keep the physique of the ninja.
You got it. Yeah. So, I didn't get this big jogging
to the deep fryer. I will say, Bill, that we used to, before we did the fish fry thing, like for many years, Dad, you can talk to this one too, but we used to just not fill in them. We'd leave the skin on them, right?
Yeah, we just clean them and we'd fry them up the way they were, one side, then the other, and pull the backbone out after they were fried. We'd fry them and we'd dip them in flour and salt, and just fry them in butter or oil, and pull the backbone out with the bones and eat them like that. And I'm telling you, there's no scales on trout, and the skin, to me, when it's up nice and crispy like that, it tastes just as good as when it's not there.
Yeah. That's what we do. And the bones would come right out once it's cooked. I mean, you'd get the odd little tiny one still in there, but for the most part, pull right out.
They're a bonier fish than
when they're cooked, if you take a hold of that nice thick backbone and you pull gently and just kind of use a fork to pull the meat away, those skeletons will come right out. It just looks like a backbone with a whole bunch of little rib cage bones on it, and they'll come right out. And then all you've got left is your fried fish, and I'm golden brown fried with the skin on. Boy, they're good.
See, that sounds fantastic. I'm all about full operation, from learning at the beginning to going out and getting it, to coming home and having the experience of cooking and eating with your family. That's where the total closed loop system comes into play for me. I like that.
Sounds
like a lot of fun you guys have.
Well, and now I'm at the crossroads now, and Scott might be too, where at what age do I bring my kids? And and Dad, did you go through this? Answer me this, because I think, okay, I want to bring Megan. I know Avery's too little. I want to bring Megan, but I know I'm afraid she's going to get bored, or I'm going to have to babysit her so much that I'm not going to catch any fish. And this is my one day a year.
And then, hey, it's easy for me, because I just say, hey, it's not my spot. I'm invited.
So you can't take your kids. I'm going to invite Abby and Amber.
Too funny.
Yeah, but that's correct. I forget how old Aaron was when he started coming with Rick. And I know Rick complained that I mean, he enjoyed watching Aaron catch fish, but he was tying on three times the amount of hooks because Aaron was losing twice as many hooks as anybody else. So he was spending a lot of time tying on hooks and trying to teach the technique to keep the hook out of the snags and stuff. And for a while there, but then it wasn't too many years when Aaron caught on. Now Aaron likes to sit with me.
Yeah.
And we just sit and visit together, and we're happy when a trout comes along and takes our line. So Aaron sits with me, and so Rick's free to fish. But you're right. When you take Megan, I don't care how old she is, a 12, 15, you're still going to be tying on a lot of hooks, showing them the technique of tying on the hooks. And once she learns that technique, she can tie on her own. But then you're still going to want to get in there and see if you can get that hook out without breaking it off.
Yeah.
And so it's going to take up some of your time, and they're going to be with you. You're not going to let them go on their own. There's no way.
So, oh gosh, not along the stream edge, not a chance. So is that how you were with me when I was coming along?
Yeah. When you were small like that. Yeah. And it was, you didn't catch your first fish for some time.
I remember my first fish. I remember exactly where it is. We walked by it. I always say, Scott, there's where I caught my first fish.
Yep.
Yeah. And I can remember that. You were old enough that you could fish okay, and I was prepared to tie on hooks and all the rest. But once you caught that first brown, and it was a nice brown, it wasn't little by any means, it wasn't a monster, but it was a nice brown. It's probably about a 15-inch brown, and it was a nice fish. Well, that was it. You didn't care how many you broke off after that. Once you learned you could tie on your own hooks, I mean, you were on your way then. I just fished the hole right next to you or beside you and let you go. And then from then on, we had a blast. But everything that you ever did, you wanted to conquer it. You always had the drive. Same with bull riding. You wanted to learn everything about it. You wanted to conquer it. So once you learned the quick tie and the solid knot for those hooks, you tied your own on and you were back in that water. But once you caught that first one, that was it. Lit a fire. And I can remember telling you, and then you'd go pick up the worms, and we always took 4 dozen each. Even now, like, I don't care if there's 3, 4, or 5 of us, we take 4 dozen each, because you go through a lot of worms, losing them or breaking off. And I remember you saying you're going to run over to the corner store.
Dixie Dairy Bar.
And when you were going to run over there and buy the worms. And I said, okay, they're going to ask you, they're going to say, you're going fishing, are you? And you're going to say, yeah, we're going brown trout. And they're going to start asking you questions. There's going to be fishermen in there. And I said, they're, as soon as you say, we always limit out with brown, they're going to be on you like white on rice.
Yeah.
Do not tell them where we go. And you came back and you said, yep, that's exactly what happened. They were asking me all kinds of questions. You remember that?
Yep. Yeah, no, and I remember going in when I 8, 10 years old. I wasn't fishing at that time. I was just on your hip walking in with you and getting smacked in the face with thorns. And so I wasn't thinking I wanted to do it. And then when I finally went back, it was frustrating up until I caught that first brown, because you think everything is a fish. You feel it bounce off the log, or you feel it hit the bottom, or you feel anything. And is that the fish? Did I miss it? Was that it? And no fish. And it's frustrating until you finally, and I remember you, Dad, telling me, you'll know if it's a fish, you're going to know it's a fish. And I'm thinking, but I just felt something. That's got to be a fish. But then once that fish actually tapped it, you know that's a fish. I mean, it is so distinct. And like pulling that line out of your hand, it's crazy that now you know. So yeah, once you feel that, there is nothing. That's what I mean. Oh my gosh. I'm all excited right now just thinking about it.
I can't wait.
I know. All right. We got 2 months to go. That's killing me now. Yeah. No, that was, there's nothing like it when you feel that tap, tap, when you're hunting trout and, oh man. And then they come out of there dancing and flipping and skipping and yeah, it's something else.
It's a good point time. That you make though, when, you know, you can,
pose it out there. And I think Don did a great job answering that question. But when is the right time for any of this stuff, right? You know, if your kids, my kids, Scott's kids, if you take them out fishing on big bodies of water, you teach them things that can apply to a more specialized thing like trout fishing. Can you tie a knot? Can you feel a fish? Can you know, there's so many elements of fishing there that can apply, but the foundation needs to be there before you can feel comfortable that you're not going to have your day completely absorbed with teaching those things that you can do at home, right?
Yeah.
You can tie 100 hooks at home before you ever even get onto the stream.
And I like that. Thank you, Bill. I may just do that because that was another painful thing, wasn't it, Dad? You're breaking off so many hooks and having to tie so many hooks, and you got to make sure you tie them right because you'd rather straighten the hook out and then use your pliers to bend it back than you would want to tie another hook on. Like it gets to be that point because you are, you either catch a fish, and that's what I always said. I say it to Scott all the time. You either catch a fish or you break a hook, you lose a hook. It's not cast. Oh, I caught a fish. No. It's you're catching a fish or you're losing that hook or you're not trout hunting because those trout are not sitting where you can just cast and reel in. They're sitting up under those logs where that hook's got to go. So you're going to break off. And so, yes, tying hooks. I remember as a kid at Dad trying to show me. And then, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I can do it now myself. Now that I'm 41.
Yeah. You just learned last year, didn't you?
Yeah. I couldn't keep up the charade anymore. He quit walking with me.
Don, you finally had to let him loose, did you?
Yeah.
Oh man. But yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, so Bill, you've not ever trout fished like that or anything. You're a bass fisherman and a pickerel, not a walleye. You're a pickerel.
That's right. Yeah. I've never done the stream. When I was growing up, I bought myself a fly rod because I thought I would do some fly fishing. And I tried to cast that and got frustrated enough that I just picked up the spinning rod and went back to that. But you know, I've always thought that it would be nice to do an Alaskan type. That's the envisionment I have in my mind is going on one of those streams up there, doing a nice fly-in trip of some sort. But I guess what you're telling me is there's definitely opportunities to do this type of fishing in Ontario that you can stream fish and hunt them, and whether it's trout or salmon when the spawn is on, I guess you could find yourself into a load of good fun. And I think it's time for me to start to do some exploration of this.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So Dad, without mentioning stream names, how many streams do you think you know of right now that we can fish this way?
Three where I would go.
Yeah. I know of three.
I fished a lot of streams and
hey, I only know two of those three.
There's an inner circle, and then there's an inner circle.
I'll tell you, Scott, the two that you fished are the two main ones, and the world opening day, it's the premier, but the other one is good. And that day that you got, that was the day you got your first brown, wasn't it, at that stream?
Like in, yes.
And that rough water. Story. That big one in that rough water. Yep.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm looking at that picture right now.
Yeah, so am I. He just sent it to me. Just to brag about it. My phone lit up here and I'm like, what's this? And he sent me that standing there holding that brown.
There's two different pictures in that picture though. I sent two pictures.
I thought it was just a different angle.
I can remember the water was high. It was running fast. It was muddy. And we were fishing hard, and I'd said to you, we came to a feeder stream, and I said, you know what? And we walked, what? We walked half a mile in before we started fishing.
Oh, we walked a long ways. And I went further yet. I was upstream when Scott caught that one at that, where that inlet came in.
We didn't follow the stream. I got a place on that one where I like to start, and it's a half mile off the road. We don't follow the stream. And we walked in, and I knew the stream would cut through the woods at this point, and we met the stream at that point. Well, then you cross this feeder stream, and I remember saying to you, you know what, if we're going to catch a fish, it's going to be at the mouth of this feeder stream. But I really don't even have much faith in it because the water is so deep and everything.
So high and fast.
And let it,
drift across there, and you said, I got a hit. The next thing I know, you're holding a beautiful big brown trout.
Yeah, it was awesome. That was a nice fish.
We will make that one the cover. How's that shot?
Awesome.
Yep, that was
that's great. There's some good stories there. I enjoy hearing the. I learned a lot tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I hope all the listeners did too. But I love it. I absolutely do. And now talking about it, darn it, we should have waited another month or so, because now I got to wait for that anticipation for the last Saturday in April to roll around. My gosh.
You're all fired up now.
Yep, no doubt. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We hope everybody enjoyed the trout hunting story, and get out and give it a try. If you have any questions, shoot them up. But if you want to be on the podcast, by all means, message us up. We'll answer your questions. We'll even bring you on, and you can share some of your fishing, hunting, outdoor stories with us so that we can learn from you as much as we learn from each other. So anyway, I think it was pretty good. Anybody got anything else to add?
No, anxious for the follow-up podcast for how you guys did in your, that'll be a good one for
good answer.
First
yeah.
week of May or second, yeah. So this would be.
Good I would follow-up. Like to add that not every year is a good year, because if we get a lot of rain and the river's high, one year, two or three years ago, it was so high the whole flats was flooded.
Yeah, we couldn't even get in.
Drove there and drove home.
It was impossible to fish. We couldn't fish. The fishing didn't get good till a week later. Now, we didn't go because we were turkey hunting, but my son-in-law did, and he got three fish over 4 pounds a week later, because they were still up the stream. They hadn't gone back down, but the stream had gone down where you could fish it. So not every opening day is good, depending on the weather. A lot of rain ruins it.
Yep. Or a thaw.
Absolutely.
A late thaw.
Very good. Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall?
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire, having some fun.